Welcome to the Pinkham.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. I am here with Paddy Davitt at Thetford Sainsbury's Cafe. Have I got that right?
Don't sound so surprised, Michael. You've just had your clotted cream and jam.
I've had my toasted
tea cake.
They did look nice.
They were both very nice.
Well, there we go. That's a little insight into the snackability we manage on our trip home from Stoke. Now, I know we've got a few things to catch up on. We've had an FA Cup exit in the third round to Manchester City, and then all the Lewis Grabban fun and games before what happened at Stoke. So, let's get through the FA Cup exit first, shall we? Is there anything we need to say? Norwich lost 3-0. Sergio Aguero was very good. They were able to bring Kevin De Bruyne actually off the bench, and he scored the third goal. Kelechi Iheanacho scored in the middle. Norwich made a few changes, but not any more than Man City did. And I don't think Alec Neil got anything particularly wrong. It's just that the players didn't play very well, mostly, and they were up against a very good side. Yeah,
that's pretty much top bottom. A good side who were motivated as well. Clearly, they didn't see that as some additional accessory for the season. They clearly want to go deep into the competition. And you can see that in the intent and the way they set about it. And literally, it was 15 minutes in the midway through the first half. Bang, bang, game was over. But you mentioned Alex Neil there, and at no point in the build-up, whenever asked, did he try and disingenuously make out the FA Cup was the top of his priority list. So we were all very aware of where it lay going into the game, and you wouldn't want to say that gave the players an excuse who turned out, but let's just say final whistle blew there. I don't think anybody was overly fussed. Other than maybe they'd like to see more of a contest on the day, the ones you paid, which is fair enough, you understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Norwich's FA Cup record is a bit of a shocker now. I think 4 third round exits in the last 6 seasons, and one of the times they actually got past the third round, they then went on to lose at home to Luton. And I suppose, to me, it was interesting because I wrote all that down, and then you tied it in with the fact that of those 6 seasons, 4 of them they've been in the Premier League trying to battle for survival. The other 2 they've been in the Championship and actually been promoted.
Yeah.
It's just not the priority, is it? And the other thing I thought was interesting, Alec Neil said how he could sense it was more relaxed at Colney in the build-up to the tie. But that's just a show of the fact that the tension of the Premier League isn't there, rather than them taking it lightly. That's what I would say.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. There was no lack of effort. I mean, you wouldn't say players who were going through the motions. There just wasn't that intensity or that edge that there is, when it's a Premier League game with 3 points at stake and you're building towards what has been from the day one at Crystal Palace in that sunny August at Carrow Road, the main objective, which is to stay in the league again. So, that is the be-all and end-all this season, and anything else that isn't that, sadly, for the romantics, is secondary. So, it was just really, for me, it was a fixture on the calendar. It was always going to be a tough draw. Alec Neil made the point. He could have made no changes from the team that had beaten Southampton a few days earlier, and then they still got beat 3-0 because Man City, their squad is as good as, if not the best, in the country. With the wealth they've got, you touched on the fact that De Bruyne could come on. He came on for a guy in Raheem Sterling, who combined total, I think I wrote, of £99 million. So therein lies what they're up against. Ultimately that is a wretched cup record, but I think you've then qualified it by more or less placing it in the context of what they've been trying to do in the leagues, either get into the Premier League or stay in it over the last few years, and unfortunately that is the reality now, and you see it all across the leagues. Look at Swansea. At least we didn't have the embarrassment of going to a League 2 club and getting turned over.
Not this year.
Nah.
That will probably put the FA Cup to bed for another season. Hurrah, well done. We've had a bit of transfer movement, I suppose. The 3 key things worth discussing, I suppose, are Ivo Pinto's arrival, although, by the sounds of it, his acclimatisation to English football from the Croatian league, and I guess the fact he's in the middle of his winter break is going to mean that we probably won't see him for, 2 or 3 weeks, I guess, maybe a couple of weeks. But he is in the building, a couple of million quid there. Lewis Grabban is out of the building for £8 million to Bournemouth. And, of course, also Bournemouth managed to sign Benik Afobe in the middle from Wolves, who Norwich had been interested in August. But I don't think there's much more to be said about Evo. That is what we've spoken about that one. In terms of Lewis, where I mean, a good fee for a player that essentially kind of run its course here, hasn't it, Norwich?
Unbelievable money, staggering amounts of money. But it probably underlines how much Bournemouth wanted the player, firstly, but also, to me, almost, I think Norwich paid just over $3 million for him, and it's almost now the whole inflation that's kicked in and has been talked about at length with what's at stake in the summer with a new broadcast deal. It's almost the £3 or £4 million player is now effectively the £8 million player, and then the £10 million player 4 years ago is now the £15-20 million player. It's literally just an escalator, but Norwich have, you know, intimated that they've made a 4.5 profit on him. I don't think any Norwich fan, looking at the body of work that he put into the club and the baggage, shall we say, along the way, would not think £4.5 million profit is a good deal. The only caveat, and it's pertinent because they go there this Saturday, of course, is that if he was to play and score, then, you know, that's not helping Norwich's cause, is it? But that's the calculated gamble Alex Neil has taken. He did it with Bradley Johnson, and he's done it with Lewis Grabban, so it's a brave call, and time will tell.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that. I thought it was a good point Alec made, that, you know, he's now going to, a stronger Bournemouth are going to have to come up with everyone else that Norwich are going to be fighting down at the bottom with. I just don't know why they couldn't have just waited a week. Yeah. And then I wouldn't have thought there was any pressure to have to get that deal done before Norwich went to Bournemouth. But there we go. All right, Lewis had some good money. It's interesting how he'll probably be booed every time he comes up against Norwich. Yeah, he scored a fair few important goals against Ipswich, which doesn't normally work like that. But ho-hum, he obviously had a key role at key times last season, good and bad. And he will have his place in Norwich City history one way or the other. Moving on to Stoke then, where we are henceforth coming home from. Norwich lost 3-1, and it was all Gary O'Neill's fault. Yeah.
Well, if you want to play the blame game, Michael, yeah, I don't think there'll be too many arguing with you, though, given the way the game panned out. You know, there's no guarantee. 11v11, Stoke were looking very, very sharp on the counter. I like the look of Arnautovic a lot on the left-hand side. Joselu looked a completely different player to when I've seen him before. So, you know, the reality is they might still, a little bit like the Man City equation, they might have gone with their strongest team and still got beat. They might have still got beat with 11, but, you know, the basic truism tells you that if you have to play an hour with 10 men away from home, then you're really going to struggle in the Premier League, and that's unfortunately how it proved, despite some manful efforts from the 10 plus subs, and obviously Johnny Alson's won the goal, which sadly now will count for very little. Maybe he might win him the goal of the season, but in the context of getting Premier League points. So, night of frustration, and particularly the way you know, it wasn't like his red card in the playoff final where there's a man running through and it's absolute the height of professionalism, you could call it Stoke cynicism, that he's got to bring a guy down because he's through on goal. I mean, this guy was shepherding the ball out for a Stoke throw in front of the dugouts on the halfway line. Head's gone moment. I don't understand what he's seen there, and more to the point, his manager couldn't explain it, couldn't defend it, and you really hope it is an isolated incident, because there's no way Norwich will get to where they want to go if they're going to handicap themselves to that degree.
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't seen the tackle from Gary O'Neill, I suggest you do. It will go down. I can't ever see it being beaten for most ridiculous sending off, just like as in needless. And it was interesting looking at the replays, because you can see obviously Gary O'Neill coming from a mile off. In his face, it's not like he's raged. He looks perfectly calm, as if he's just going to press the ball. And then all of a sudden he just jumps. And the rest is history, I suppose. He did apologise to everyone. As you said, it was a shame. I'm sure he apologised to all his teammates, and they did put a lot of effort in. And certainly to Johnny Howson for his wonderful goal that had Norwich level. At which point, Alec Neil, with the game 1-1, Norwich down to 10 men, he brought on two wingers for two other, you know, forwards, if you like. He brought on Jarvis and Redmond for Wes and Vadis. Some fans criticised that move because they thought that was a little bit too attacking and reminiscent of what happened at Newcastle, but I don't see it like that, because I didn't think Joselu's goal, which was very well taken, had any particular bearing on from a result of the substitutions.
To be honest, I actually put that question to him post-match, and he said exactly that. He said, if you look at the second and third goals both came from central areas of the pitch, so you know, whatever he was doing in the wide areas didn't impact negatively on goals two and three. But I mean, he basically made the point to me that, you know, at the 60 minute mark there, you've got Wes one side, you've got Badis the other side. Badis was at fault for the first goal in terms of he wasn't strong enough in the challenge with Arnautovic. So, you know, we know what they give you going forward and with the ball. We also know what they don't give you without the ball. So you've got those two in wide areas. Stoke were clearly going to dominate possession and territory at that stage after Housen's equaliser. It made no sense, you know, they're not the top. We know what they're like. They're not the type who are going to dig in and go ratting and close down the ball. So I had no issues at all with that change, double change. You know, he said his reasoning was that because he knew the dynamic of the final 30 minutes was going to be Norwich basically having to do anything they could on counter-attacks, why not get a bit of pace in wide areas to stretch the game and give Stoke something to think about. Sadly, it didn't pan out like that. So, you know, hence why one or two might be drawing comparisons with Newcastle. But no, for me, it was the right call because Wes and Vadis, I'm afraid, on the flanks aren't going to offer you sufficient protection. But the reality is, just to reiterate, you know, those goals didn't come as a result of what he did on the wide areas. So it's a bit of a, if there is a debate to be had, I don't really see it.
I think that's my point. Probably would have been that you could have brought Martin Olsen on and then had Brady pushed on ahead of him rather than bringing on a more out-and-out winger. But again, it's irrelevant because Joselu's goal came from Stoke winning the ball in the middle and a shot from range that was really well taken. It's nothing in respect of who was playing on either flank. So I think that's probably that. A couple of points. The first goal, brilliant ball from Arnautovic for Jonathan Walters at the far post.
Yeah.
Could Declan Rudd have come for it, do you think, or was it just that good a ball?
I'd have to see it again. I'm not seeing it back. I don't know how far out Walters was when he actually made connection, but no, I'd be inclined to question what Robbie Brady's doing. You know, his lack of awareness when that ball was fed in, because it travelled a long way and Walters was just basically sharper in thought and sharper indeed. So, and Alex Neil referenced it again, you know, when he dissected the goal at Robbie Brady, he didn't react quick enough. So I think there's a debate to be had now about whether he's better or more effective to what Norwich are trying to achieve, playing him left back as opposed to one further forward. But personally, I'd like to see him one further forward. I think he influences games more at that level. I don't think he can do a job at left back, but I don't think what you lose from having him in midfield is, at the minute anyway, whether it might just be a case of the lads having a bit of a dip because he's started so well, and then prior to Christmas everybody had basically already anointed him as the player of the season, which is slightly premature. But it might just simply be he's having a bit of a lull. He's played a lot of football now this season, both for club and country, but we saw it again last night. To me, he's a better left midfielder than he's a left back.
I certainly think his level is not at what it was a couple of months ago, and that's not, you know, that could just be through form, could be through the amount of games he's played, although he didn't play in the FA Cup game. Just doesn't, the ball, you know, the crosses are going out of play rather than to where they need to go. We'll see. What was the other thing I wanted to touch on? Oh, well, I suppose we should mention the third goal, really. Ryan Bennett's own goal. It was a cracking header. He couldn't have placed it any better if he'd tried.
Quality finish from the boy. Yeah, as somebody on Twitter had sort of rather tongue-in-cheek said to me, that was 2-2 then, wasn't it? It was a second Norwich goal from a second Norwich goal scorer, but kind of summed up the night, really, didn't it? I mean, the actual free kick was Alex Tetti, I think, attempting to chop, was it Joselu, in half to get his customary yellow card. So
it's a bit near his knackers.
Yeah, I think I thought he was higher than that, to be fair. More in his chest area. But in his defence, because of his central midfield partner having abdicated responsibility, he's had to put in a hell of a shift. And that, to me, is the concern moving forward, because that game was gone, certainly gone at that moment. And it's all about this weekend now and Bournemouth. And inevitably there's lads there who will have had to go to the well a lot deeper than if they'd have had 11v11 for, you know, 90 minutes. So that's an issue for Alex Neil now. Over the next couple of days, he's got to look at the lads who maybe are running a little bit on empty. Although you would say, I mean, you rightly said there with Brady, he didn't play last Saturday, neither did Tete, so that might now come home to roost, the fact that he didn't flog them, basically, to use Sam Allardyce's parlance. But you know, it was big anyway, but it's even bigger now, I think.
I mean, I don't think Bournemouth played many of their first choice players in the FA Cup win at Birmingham at the weekend, so they'll be in a similar boat to Norwich. Brady did seem, Robbie Brady did seem to be limping when he came out through the mix zone, I've just remembered. So, I mean, it could just be a knocky runoff, but all the others seem to be wandering around perfectly fine. But anyway, all right, well, I tell you what, let's hear, shall we now, from Johnny Howson.
It's obviously always nice to get on a score sheet, but, you know, it's even nicer when it actually means something, you know, if you can get something from the game out. So, yeah, obviously a nice goal, but respectfully, it doesn't really mean anything. So, you'd certainly take not scoring and picking something up from the game, but these things happen.
Yeah. It's all about sending off, isn't it? Today, I mean, ultimately, it was pretty even up to that point. I mean, in fairness, it was fairly even for the rest of the game after sending off, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think even regardless of the sending off, I think there was still a fair few positives to take from the game. You know, these things happen, you've got to respond to them. And, I think they possibly responded well to that. You know, but it obviously did make it difficult. I think whenever you have 10 men and you come up against good sides, it can be difficult. But as I say, it's part and parcel of the game.
Did Gary apologise in the dressing
room? Yeah, he apologised obviously at half time, yeah. You know, Gaz is obviously an experienced player and he'll know what he's done, but as I say, this part and parcel of the game is. It's obviously not meant to get sent off or anything. These things happen.
Okay, can you understand? We're all sort of sitting there going, "Oh my God, what's he done? How has he done that?" Something. Yeah, you're out on the pitch more than we are.
Yeah, sometimes it's just heat at the moment. Sometimes, you know. When it happens, it's harder. You know, I've obviously not seen it back. See if it was that bad, but I say sometimes in heat at the moment, these things happen.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be appealing it. I'll be honest.
Was Johnny sort of robbed of his superb goal earning a point, which it should have probably been given the chance to. Okay, well, a Saturday, you touched on it before, Pads. How big is this game? I'm looking forward to it. You looking forward to it, Pat? Big game, big
I know
game.
You're looking forward to it.
Why?
Because you seem to have this ability to anoint Bournemouth fans or one or two Bournemouth fans on social media, so given their little club mentality with 11,000 home gates, and yet they can go out and spend 17 million on two strikers, you know, that tells you where they are. So yeah, I'm personally no fan of the little old Bournemouth What a Wonderful Story, because I think anybody who's been close to that story as Norwich have, because they cumped him out of the division last season. No, that's a bit of a fallacy, really. You know, they've got some serious money there behind them, and they're spending it, but you know, good luck to them. That's how they're going about it, and they can do it that way. Maybe Norwich can't to the same degree, but yeah, no. In terms of it's big, but you know, there's still however many games left after this one. It's big for what it stands rather than the actual tangible 3 points on offer. You know, if Norwich were to get beat, then okay, Bournemouth go above them by a point. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not by any way, shape, or form terminal, but it's just the perception that, you know, if Bournemouth is to win and heaven forbid Graben has a pivotal role, then the perception is that they're the club on the up. A little bit like Norwich prior to Stoke, that feeling they'd harnessed over the festive period, 3 wins out of 4. Suddenly the Premier League wasn't such a big bad place, and Norwich's players seemed to know, as if the penny had dropped, what it was all about. So if they could get a positive result, that would just reinforce that. But conversely, if they get beat and then also play poorly, then more questions will get asked, unfortunately. So I think it's more about perception than the actual 3 points on offer, because there's such a long way to go. I mean, where are we? We've literally just turned the corner for home, haven't we? So nothing will be decided this weekend, but it certainly could be a big game for more so what it could mean moving forward.
That's it. I think setting the tone, I think, for what's to come is the key one. Look, if Bournemouth manage to be the one club that can sustain such a disparity between the size of the club and the money they're spending, then all is good for them, just as long as not one of their fans complains about it, if it should, heaven forbid, go a little bit belly up. Who knows? Anyway, all right, well, we'll have all the usual build-up before. Have we got to leave now for Bournemouth? It feels a bit like it. It's 2 o'clock on Thursday. Probably.
Is it? No, we've got a bit of work yet to do in the fine city before we depart down the M25.
Indeed. But we will be on our way to Bournemouth on Saturday, so we will be putting all our stuff, usual stuff together ahead, during and after that game. Usual place, pinken.com. I think you can file everything off from there online, and of course the newspapers and the television and fun and games. But at least we managed a podcast, Pad. Hey, that's an achievement, I think, in this week.
You can rely on us most of the time.
That is not a guarantee. But thanks, Pat.
Thanks, mate.
And thanks for listening. And we will be back in touch after Saturday. Keep those fingers crossed.